Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Hello, everybody, and welcome not only to the Political Cesspool radio program, but welcome also to September, which means Labor Day weekend, which means finally, mercifully, the end of this long, hot and humid Southern summer. I am your host, James Edwards. Thank you for tuning in live for this special holiday edition of the Political Cesspool radio program. No holiday for the Warriors here at WLRM Studios. I'm joined by my co-host for this first hour, Keith Alexander. Keith, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm great. I haven't been suffering through this summer. Quite frankly, it's been a mild one compared to most Memphis summers.
Oh, my gosh. Upper 90 degrees about every day, about 100% humidity. Yes, that's mild for Memphis, but it's still pretty unbearable. I tell you, you know, Keith, I am a Southern boy born and bred. I've lived here in Memphis my whole life. I am still, in fact, a Confederate partisan, if you would go that far. But one of the things that just never took with me were these summers, but it's almost over, and we're going to have a break. And I love this time of year.
Well, just
I believe
about
the
how
best
tough your ancestors had to be to endure all this without air conditioning.
I know. I just God bless them. God bless them. I tell you, I mean, the Yankees couldn't have done. The Yankees were a walk in the park compared to the heat. But no, this is the best time of year for me. I love it. I love September through about February. It's nice and cool. You got all the holidays, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and of course Christmas. It's just, you know, and I've been kind of taking it all in stride this Labor Day weekend. Keith, last night my wife went out, and I've got a beautiful wife, as you know, but every now and then a guy just likes to have some alone time. She went out and went dress shopping, and we're doing the things with her girlfriends, and I was sitting back last night, kicking back with a bottle of wine, listening to the Everly Brothers CD I've got on repeat. You just can't beat a good bottle of wine of the Everly Brothers, Keith.
Now, the Everly Brothers were great exemplars of, you know, proper traditional values with songs like Devoted to You and Wake Up Little Susie and what's another one? Bird Dog. You know, all of those things were, represented a worldview and an ethos that we really need to return to, my friend.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And plus, they're two Southern boys born and raised up in Kentucky. But nevertheless, I am just in a very good temperament all the way around for any number of reasons, not the least of which being we get to come and host this show to an ever-growing and burgeoning audience every Saturday night here on the Liberty News Radio Network. What a blessing that is, and what a blessing it's been to have been able to do that for the last 5 years and continuing on going forward, going strong, as we'll celebrate our fifth-year anniversary in October just next month. But all that's great, Keith. We had five great shows last month in August and a lot of great guests. And, in fact, we had so many great guests. We're taking a break tonight. We only have one guest tonight, but it's going to be Paul Fromm, who you can never go wrong. And Paul's going to be on tonight to share with us some very uplifting news. Paul Fromm is the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. Ladies and gentlemen, we can toss one into the win column tonight. The Canadians, believe it or not, have scored a very significant victory. And Paul Fromm is going to be on with us to share that good news during the second hour. But the entire show tonight is going to be uplifting. We've got a couple of uplifting things to go along with some of the other not-so-good news. But overall, it's going to be an uplifting program tonight. And, Keith, we get letters every week in the mail. We love the show. You're our heroes. But be more uplifting. Give us more to invest our hope in. I'll even get contributions of checks come in the mail to support the program.
Well, we can't lie to the people, James. But on the other hand, what happened in Canada is really inspiring. Finally, the judicial system works the way it was intended to do, and the Canadian Supreme Court, or its equivalent, struck down the hate speech law in Canada.
Pretty much that's it in a nutshell. And again, Paul Fromm, who has been on the front lines of that battle up in Canada with his organization, appropriately titled Canadian Association for Freedom of Expression. He's going to be able to give us all the details. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to want to be sure to stay tuned through the second hour, if not the entire three-hour program tonight. But that is, as you said, Keith, very significant. I mean, you just can't say enough about it. And we're going to say a lot about it in the second hour. But
meanwhile, in the United States, I heard something today on the news to the effect that the Obama administration is considering some type of revival of the what they call fairness doctrine, which would basically put conservative talk radio, and I assume that would include the cesspool, out of business.
Well, I don't think they actually label us as conservative in the Obama administration, even though that's in fact what we are, paleoconservative. Maybe we're so far beyond conservatism that...
Well, we're beyond the Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity style of conservatism, for certain.
Yeah, but so maybe they'd give us a pass for not being pansies. Man, that's another thing. You know, once again, I have to make the confession, and I only do this because, as we've all heard, you got to keep your friends close and your enemies closer. I always like to see what I almost want to call him the left, Sean Hannity. I was listening to the Sean Hannity show the other day as I was driving around, and they were talking about this big message that I'm sure everyone's heard about now. Obama is giving an address, but it's going to be played through closed circuit to, essentially, I believe, all of the public school systems in the country. And there's just been a big hullabaloo, and rightly so, a great outpouring of disappointment from the conservative families of this nation. They don't want to hear it. I got to hear it on the radio program, and Keith, it just defies belief. At first, when they were playing it, I thought it was a parody. I thought it was just some sort of a joke, until I realized that it was, in fact, very serious. This is a message that essentially the Obama administration has put together that's going to all the public schools, as everyone's, of course, getting back in the school year now with it being Labor Day. School started back a couple of weeks ago, and you really hit the full stride after you come back for Labor Day break. This is going to be shown in the schools, and it's asking the children in these classrooms, these elementary classrooms, what they can do to help make sure all children have government-sponsored health care. It says in so many words, and I'm not exaggerating, what can you do to serve the president? And it's asking
they're trying to turn the children into a fifth column against their conservative parents.
Well, that's exactly right. It was so blatant and so in your face. Like I said, for quite some time, until I did some research on it, I thought that this was just a parody that the Hannity Show was doing. But leave it to Sean Hannity to take a golden opportunity to stand up for conservatism and lace it with your basic neoconservative rhetoric. He said, you know, I don't mind that they're going to learn about what Obama's doing in school, but why can't they learn about the other great presidents in school as well? And so help me God, the great presidents that he mentioned were John F. Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln. I mean,
Sean Hannity is, you know, a perfect example of what happens when you try to light a ballroom with a 40-watt bulb. The guy, I think, you know, is a dropout from junior college, but he's assumes to discuss to everybody, to the world, you know, what the proper position in conservatism is on every issue. And, of course, he gets it wrong probably about 90% of the time.
Well, you know, I think the Obama administration has just gone too far, not only with this, but some of their more in-your-face tactics, such as 90% of the country being against socialized health care, yet Obama thinks that he knows better than all of us, and he's going to go and have this speech to the joint session of Congress, and it's going to be aired on all the networks because, you know, of course, he's smarter than all of us, so he's going to convince us that we're all wrong by doing this address to the nation that's going to be aired everywhere, and then this thing with the schools.
Well, that's a problem with Obama, really. You know, he is a smooth, he's slick as a peeled onion, as my grandfather would have said, but he is a hard leftist, raised that way by his hard leftist mother, cultural Marxist mother, and his communist father, and at least he got the genes from him. He didn't hang around very much, I guess about 2 weeks after he was born before he split. But, you know, because of that, because he has this kind of avuncular uncle, you know, wiggly type of style, he's particularly dangerous because, you know, he doesn't come across as a radical, but what he believes is the essence of radicalism.
Well, he's obviously a hardcore Marxist, and his handlers, the people who are really behind his decisions as president, Rahm Emanuel, et cetera, are dyed-in-the-wool Zionist supremacists, and obviously they don't have anyone's best interest at heart but their own. And so you've got all this going, but Keith, like I said, I think they're just getting a little overzealous here, and I am very much encouraged at what's happened since his ascension to the presidency, in so much as a lot of parents across the nation are just screaming foul play and standing up. They're pulling their kids out of school the day that this address to the public school system is going out by Obama. And they're not sending them to school. I have heard a lot of parents getting upset. And then with the success of the Tea Parties and thousands, hundreds of thousands even, of people across the country standing up against socialism.
Well, I think I read something on the Cesspool website today that some parts of the country, like North Texas, are refusing to carry it.
Well, see, I mean, it's. I'm telling you, folks, I've been in this business for about a decade now, and I'm only 29, but my whole adult life has been spent in the political process, the last five of which in doing this show. I am more encouraged right now with the, I hate to use the word renaissance because we're not quite there yet and we're still woefully unorganized, but our people are seemingly rising up a little bit, and I'm encouraged.
Awakening.
And the support of this program is ballooning as well. But we got to take a time out. We're just getting started. We'll be right back, everybody.
Way, there's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be...
Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. As we were saying just before the break, a lot to take encouragement in, I do believe, and I say this as maybe not a pessimist, but certainly someone who has a level head in all this. I don't get too excited or too distraught no matter what's coming about, because I think that's the way you should carry yourself. But I have seen some encouraging trends that are developing, I believe, because the administration that is currently in power in this country is reaching so far so fast that it's even shocking our already very much dumbed down and disinterested public. But we were talking specifically in the last hour about what Obama's trying to do with the healthcare debate, what he's trying to do with this closed-circuit message to all of the public school systems across the country. A very, very issue-oriented presentation. It'd be one thing if the president of the United States was just coming on to welcome all the kids back to school, tell them to study real hard, do their homework, show up for class, and maybe you can make something out of yourself. Some sort of a general message like that, you know, respect your teacher, something that we could all agree with, whether it's coming from Obama or someone that we would align with politically speaking. We couldn't deny that that would be a decent message for the president. But that's not what he did. That's not what he did at all. What he did was absolutely 100% propagandized left-leaning message. We're talking about it now. Hannity's talked about it. A lot of other major radio outlets have talked about it. But the parents are lashing out. Thank God that this is happening. But Keith, and they should. And they should be more in tune with what's coming on, because as we were talking about during the break, and this was also something that was discussed on the Fox News Network last week, the UN has recommended to the United States Department of Education, the United States government in general, that beginning with students, five-year-old students, that would make them, what, preschool or kindergarten, that they have sex education courses available, not just available, but mandated to five-year-old students, kindergarten students, sex education. That's what the UN thinks is a good idea for American boys and girls. Keith, and you said this isn't new news. This is something that they've always tried.
Now, it shows there's nothing new under the sun. This is what George Lukacs, one of the founders of the Frankfurt School in Germany in 1923, did when he was Minister of Education in Bela Kun's short-lived, about 6 months duration, communist government in Hungary in 1919. And one of the things he did to outrage the citizenry of Hungary was to try to institute sex education beginning in the first grade for these children, which was then the earliest school that you had. And of course, all this stuff, just like the one here, is extremely graphic, gets into the mechanics of sex and things like that. And that is, you know, offensive. And that's why, for example, the Hungarian people didn't tried to defend when Romania invaded them and ended the Bela Kun government. They were so disgusted with the bellicoon Marxist government that they wanted to help rid themselves of it and were glad to get assistance from the Romanians to do it.
Well, Keith, like I said, it shouldn't take a president as radicalized to the left as Obama before our people wake up and take notice. But if that's what it takes, then better late than never. And I'm not saying we're out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. God knows we are really behind the eight ball here. We're fighting a retreating battle on all fronts. But we've got to start taking back our institutions. America,
well, you know,
in
1950... getting our children, though. It's like the you know, beatnik, Jewish, homosexual poet Allen Ginsberg said, "We will steal your children." They're still trying to steal our children.
Well, and they're stealing our children because, you know, look, if you look at the America in 1950, that really, I think, and Keith, we've talked about it many times before, was the apex. It was the zenith of the American nuclear family and traditions and morals and so on and so forth. And since that time, for reasons we've talked about on this show for half a decade now, there's been a subversive force out there that has taken our institutions, captured our institutions. When I say our institutions, what am I talking about? Specifically, academia, entertainment, movies, the church, obviously
news
education.
Media.
And they perverted them to promote this left-wing and anti-American, anti-Christian, these anti-Christian tenets and anti-American tenets. And we've got to start taking back these institutions. If the left can do it, so can we. Particularly when you understand that we are still 70%, European Americans are still 70% of the population in this country, maybe 65 if you want to go lowball, but of that 65%, we still have enough people who are fundamentally conservative that we could take back this country in very short order if we could just get organized and if we could just stop settling for the so-called lesser of two evils. But Keith, every day, it's easy to find something every day that offends our people, yet we have no organizations other than maybe the political cesspool and a couple of organizations like the Council of Conservative Citizens, European Americans United, despite the fact that we make up 65% of the citizenry of this country. We have no organizations, no media outlets speaking out on behalf of our interests exclusively. And of course,
well,
it's okay.
This is why William Lynn said that political correctness was like cultural AIDS. Political correctness is what prevents us from speaking out against liberalism and liberal initiatives. And we've got to speak out. That's our immune system. That's the way that we attack these things. And, of course, trying to go behind the backs of parents directly to the children is a way to prevent, you know, the traditional safeguards of the family from operating. You know, if a child was told this, and the parents knew about it, if it were on the TV generally, they could say, this is a bunch of baloney. But I guarantee you there are going to be a lot of children that hear no feedback from their parents because they have intentionally hidden this message from the parents.
Well, that's what, exactly.
With the Obama speech is what
I'm
talking about.
Children today are now being raised by the government schools and the left-wing controlled media. But we've got to do something. We've got to do more than what we're doing. We need to have organizations and obviously shows like this who I think consistently and steadfastly we've spoken out on behalf of our people and of paleoconservatism for the last 5 years. But while we're on the topic of schools and what's going on in schools, you know, something like this should get nationwide attention. You know, the so-called phony pseudo-conservative outlets like the Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly shows should be talking about issues like this and demanding that kids not be reprimanded. And here's what I'm talking about. In Gainesville, Florida, and this is documented on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org, all of the issues that we talk about on this program are referenced with links and factual information at thepoliticalcesspool.org if you want to do the research for yourself. But in Gainesville, Florida, a church there, Keith, had T-shirts printed up that say, "Islam is the devil," on the back. And on the front of the shirt, it says, "Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life." That stuff that most Americans, most Christian Americans, would not have a problem with. Students who have worn the shirt, however, to local public schools have been sent home for violating a dress code which bans offensive and disruptive messages. Jesus Christ, I am the way, truth, and the life. That is, according to the Gainesville school system, offensive and disruptive. And here's the kicker. The pastor of the church said he had to go on the internet to order the shirts because all of the local screen printing companies were too scared to print them. Keith, we have a minute for you to address that issue out of Gainesville, Florida.
Again, what William Lynn said, political correctness is cultural AIDS. If you're a Christian, then basically you believe that. And it's not just against Islam, it's against every other competing religion. You know, you're either a Christian or you're not. Islam believes that about Christianity. Hinduism believes that about Islam and Christianity. You know, it just goes without saying. And they're basically telling you that if you're a Christian and you're white in America, you can't be serious about your traditional religion.
Well, here's the thing. I don't have a problem if we're in, you know, the Congo or Iran, and they don't want us wearing these Christian shirts. But by God, in God's country, in the United States of America, particularly in the South, you wear a shirt like that, it's not offensive. This is our country, and if anyone has a problem with it, they can either adapt or go back to the third world hellhole from whence they came. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in the political cesspool right after this.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
It's Saturday, September 5th. It's Labor Day weekend, 2009. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined for the first hour by Keith Alexander, who is co-hosting with me for the first third of tonight's live program, and we're so happy and thankful to be with you here in the political cesspool tonight on AM 1380 WLRM radio from our flagship station in Memphis, Tennessee, and going out to our affiliates on the Liberty News Radio Network and, of course, on the internet and satellite as well. No matter how you're listening to us this holiday weekend, we are blessed that you're tuned in. And I really mean that, Keith. I have a lot of love in my heart and a lot of appreciation for the people who make this show possible. And of course, I'm talking about our listeners out there from Tennessee and around the world who send us their well wishes and critiques and, of course, their donations. We got a donation in the mail this week, Keith, from a gentleman who listened to the program last week where we did the hour-long segment on the real history of Ted Kennedy. And by the way, if you missed that show, go back and catch it on the broadcast archives. Just go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and link over to our broadcast archives page, courtesy of Liberty News Radio. Great shows we had in August, a lot of great guests. We're only having one guest tonight because we got to catch up on some news. When we have all of these great guests, it's kind of hard to have the time available to cover some of the news stories that have caught our interest, but we're doing that tonight. But anyway, we got the letter in the mail, Keith, a donation from a listener who was complimentary about our segment on Kennedy last week, and he went on to say that the good news for Kennedy is, at least now, he can vote in Chicago. And he's
well,
right.
I'll tell you what, you know, one thing that we mentioned over the week that we didn't mention last week is the nexus between Ted Kennedy and Catholicism and the fact that he, among the many other bad things that he did during his tenure in the U.S. Senate, was consistently support abortion rights, as they are called, so-called rights, and sodomy, homosexual rights. And, of course, both are denounced by the Catholic Church. But on the other hand, the Catholic Church, the silence was deafening about Teddy Kennedy, and he gets a full-blown honorific burial with all the trimmings in a Catholic cathedral.
See, I mean, it's just completely irreconcilable. There's no words escape me, Keith, when you're trying to connect the disconnect there and the double standards and hypocrisy of both Kennedy family and the church. But not to revisit that in too much detail, we really covered a lot about the scum that was Ted Kennedy, and I don't mind using that word for a man who did so much damage to this country and its founding ideals.
Well, just another example of how our institutions fail us as traditionalists and conservatives. You would think that of all groups, the church would be prepared to step in the breach and denounce this, but instead, like I said, the silence is deafening from the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I really don't think he should have been allowed in a church. I mean, he obviously wasn't a Christian.
Well, he should have been excommunicated. quite
absolutely.
Frankly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, when's the last time he actually went to church? Probably never. But anyway, Keith, you know, that's one thing. We also, obviously, in the first half hour have been talking about primarily issues related to school, Obama's address there, what the U.N. wants to teach our kids, the issue out of Gainesville, Florida, about the Christian T-shirt there. People get, obviously, you get kicked out of school for wearing a Confederate flag T-shirt because, God forbid, you stand up for a flag that stood for the original intent of the Founding Fathers. But now you're getting kicked out for wearing a Jesus T-shirt. Kind of coinciding with our theme for this hour about what's going on in the schools, and also revisiting something we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the caste system in sports, both high school sports all the way up to the pros, you have found a perfect example of a story that happened just last night here in the Memphis area that'll really connect these two themes for this first hour, public schools and sports. Keith, what's the scoop?
Well, you know, we had done those two programs, one with Don Wassel from Cass Football, and the other kind of our follow-up and take on it. And basically, we were talking about the caste system in sports, which tries to impress the public generally with the fact, or with the supposed fact, or the impression that blacks are superior athletes to whites, particularly in sports like American football and basketball. And of course, there's evidence every week through football season to prove that that's not the case. For example, last night, a private school in Memphis played a football game against a powerhouse public majority black school in Mississippi, where the starting team was, you know, 11 blacks on the Mississippi team, South Panola, and they were playing against this MUS, Memphis University School. South Panola was favored by about 30 points by the pundits and the prognosticators, but they won the game 21-19. And, you know, this is not an isolated incident. I looked at the sports page today in the local newspaper, and in virtually every game in which a white private school played a black public school, the white public private school won. CBHS beat Clarksdale, Mississippi. Harding Academy beat a black public school team. Every one of these games disproves this commonplace notion that most people just take as gospel and believe in.
Well, once again, if you rely on professional sports, which are obviously controlled and operated, and the perception that is transmitted by watching these games on nationwide television, you would believe that, obviously, because we see so many blacks on the teams, that they are superior athletes. Because, as we know, if you're the better athlete or the more qualified student, you should get the scholarship or the spot on the team. But, Keith, if the prevailing logic or so-called logic was beaten so many times here in Memphis, does it stand to reason that it's probably that way nationwide? And if so, why are we saddled as European Americans with this stigma that we are inferior when it comes to our athletic prowess?
Because, quite frankly, that's the way that the elites in our society want it. That's what's happening. It's hard to understand this caste football system. Why would white coaches, like the coach of the South Panola team, who is white, why would white team owners in professional sports, why would their managers, who tend to be white, all disfavor whites in favor non-whites? Well, the reason is that that's the path of least resistance. If you recruit a black team, basically that meets the new expectations. And as one of our listeners said during in response to one of our earlier shows, in, I think, the early 70s, there was a black quarterback for the University of Tennessee named Condridge Holloway, who came from Alabama. And Condridge Holloway apparently wanted to go to the University of Alabama, but was told by Bear Bryant that the people of Alabama weren't ready for a black quarterback. So consequently, if a coach could keep a black player out of his deserved position because of his race in 1971 or two, then a coach today could definitely keep a white player out of his deserved position. And that's exactly what's happening. You know, we would see, if there was fairness and you have all of these white teams in high school beating all these black teams, you would expect to see at the very least some more representation than you do on most Division I college teams of white athletes, but you don't.
Well, that was my very next.
That just tells me that something is rotten in Denmark.
That was my very next question to you, Keith, a rhetorical question. But before I asked it, I wanted to infuse, and I did so before a couple of weeks ago when we covered this issue on the program. This wasn't a fluke what happened in the Mid-South last night. This was something that was replicated exponentially across the country in these high school sporting events, that being the private schools trouncing the urban or the the black
public
schools.
Trouncing,
this was
something, at least Keith, they beat them. So if they, even if they, you know, you would think that if the white teams beat them with such regularity, you would at least see one-third of the typical Division I football team being white and one-third of the starters being white, but you never see that.
That was the question. You know, when it comes time for these kids to be recruited by college football teams, how many people from the defeated South Panola team do you think are going to make the college cut and get the athletic scholarships, and how many kids from the MUS team that won last night and that always wins?
It's usually about eight guys from South Panola that get Division I scholarships out of their starting 11. And for a team like MUS, they're lucky if they get one or two.
And because high school sports are so relatively uncovered by the media in relation to the coverage that college sports gets, they can get away with this because no one knows any better. No one knows the difference. How many people truly follow high school sports other than the parents of these kids? No one. Not really.
Well, you know, it's they keep saying things like, you know, oh, it must be better coaching or better facilities. That's poppycock. You know, you play the football game on the field between the chalk lines, and that's where the white kids are proving themselves to be every bit as good as the black kids.
Hey, Keith, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more. We're going to follow up right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Yes, sir, Art Frith. Here I am, James Edwards with you along with Keith Alexander as we continue on this September 5th. Ladies and gentlemen, remember, if you appreciate the work of this radio program and our fierce and defiant yet tasteful and professional stands we take on these issues, remember that we need both your moral and financial support. Without your support, we don't exist. You can contribute to this program in any way you see fit by going to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And Keith, we're continuing on now. We've been talking about schools primarily, what's going on in education for the better part of this hour. We have segued in from education to the caste system, the caste sports system, as it manifests itself in high school athletics specifically. And we were talking before how the double standard, excuse me, not the double standard, but how the public perception is almost always shattered by reality when it comes time for the two teams, one who's supposed to be inferior, one who's supposed to be superior, when they clash in the game.
But the
result normally
been so complete, James, that basically most people have learned to ignore what their lying eyes tell them when they see the white team beat the black team.
But that being said, what's so important about this? What's in and of itself, okay, so whites aren't as bad of athletes. Perhaps they're even better, but who really cares one way or the other? It's just high school sports. But it's much larger than that. Keith, as you were saying during the break, there's a much larger societal effect in play here, and obviously the caste system in sports is just one of the many facets of cultural Marxism. But expound upon those points, Keith.
Well, see, cultural Marxism is basically the technical name for modern liberalism, and where classical Marxism demonized the capitalist class and everybody was defined by their place in the economy, cultural Marxism uses race. And the white male hegemony is the enemy, and they're trying to break it down everywhere, including in sports. You notice how the only matters in the NFL that seem to gather constant commentary is the so-called lack of black head coaches and black quarterbacks when black coaches and black quarterbacks are already overrepresented in the NFL and in Division I college based upon their representation in the population generally, which is 13%. They're intent upon inducing on young white males a condition that is part of the classical writings of cultural Marxism called cultural pessimism. They want white boys, as they're growing up, to think they're inferior. And one of the ways they do this is by reinforcing them with images all the time whenever they turn on, like, college football today or pro football tomorrow. They're going to see a predominance of black athletes out there playing. They want to play football. They enjoy playing football, but they're saying to them, you're no good at football. And if you're no good at football, it's a small leap to say, I'm inferior in everything. And that's exactly what the left, the liberals, the cultural Marxists want young white males to think.
Well, Keith, as I said, in my experience, this was a decade ago when I was still over a decade ago. My goodness, 15 years ago. I forget how old I'm getting now. But when I was in high school playing on the basketball team, every time we would play the so-called urban public school teams, we knew that was going to be a cream puff game. We knew that based upon the track record of results that we had set.
Well,
based
that's
upon
what
the
happened.
Precedence.
You know, back in the late 60s when I was playing high school football, whenever we played, we started playing black teams for the first time, and we were, you know, thinking, what's this going to be like? And what we found out is that we cakewalked on them.
Well, and that was my experience, too, a couple of decades later. And I was, you know, on the basketball team there, shooting guard. And it was the private schools that we hated to play because they always gave us the tougher challenge. But Keith, you know, it's like I said, it's not really even about diversity. The proponents of this political correctness in sports and this caste system in sports don't want diversity. What they want, and believe it, people, is the absolute dispossession and displacement of European Americans in sports, just like they want our dispossession and displacement in entertainment and academia and everywhere else. If you don't believe it, if they truly wanted equality or an equal representation of the different races in these leagues, Keith, the NBA is 90% black. If they wanted to diversify the NBA, they would put a few European Americans in the league, particularly if, as we have, I think, the facts prove, if they're at least equally qualified to be in the league. If they wanted to diversify it, they'd put a few European Americans in the league. If the WNBA wanted to diversify their ranks, they'd put a few heterosexual players in the league. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's like Orwellian newspeak from Orwell's novel 1984. Basically, diversity means a lack of diversity, a lack of white people in sports and in coaching and in other positions of authority within society, other positions of prominence in society.
And Keith, let's be clear once again, because inevitably we have people listening to this show and they're going to say, oh my God, listen to y'all's talk. Listen to this racist rhetoric. Well, it's not racist at all. What are we advocating here? We're advocating equal opportunity. We're advocating advancement based upon merit. Best player for the job, get the spot on the team. That's what we're talking about. Best qualified student, get the scholarship. Best qualified applicant, get the job. Equal opportunity. I don't want to see people who aren't of my ethnicity denied opportunity, but I sure don't want members of my own family denied that opportunity, and that's what's going on here. Equal opportunity. If we're given an equal playing field, Keith, I like our chances.
Well, I do, too, all the way across the board, intellectually, athletically, and in every other respect. And see, what do you do about it? Tomorrow in Memphis, there's going to be a big football game between Ole Miss and Memphis State, and the tickets for that game are $55 each. Now, I'm not going to spend $55 to see 12 black athletes on the defensive side of the ball play against maybe 9 black athletes on the other side of the ball for both teams. What we've said before in the past is that the only sound a liberal fears is the sound of a closing purse. And we just don't need to be supporting this. See, we have
and that doesn't mean that
you just flock to these games. In fact, I guarantee if they pan the stadium, watch ESPN tomorrow, you're going to see at least 90%, if not more, of the fans being white people. But we continue to support our own dispossession, which is baffling to me. You know, I don't think you would see black people going out to see a sports team in which the athletes were 90% or more white.
Nor should they, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they doesn't necessarily mean, and I stress the word necessarily, that they hate us. I know in our case it's not because you hate anybody, Keith, that you want to not go and spend your money there, but truly what interest of it is ours?
Well, the thing is, this is more insidious than that. If this were just the normal result of free competition, that'd be one thing, but it's not. What we need people to understand is that this is not a coincidence or an accident or the result of natural competition. This is an intentional effort to dispossess and whites and to end what they consider to be the unfair white male hegemony in the world.
Well, there's an unfair hegemony taking place now. It's just not one that benefits us. And again, like I said, it's not that we want it to be skewed in our favor. It's not that we want it to be rigged in our favor as it is rigged now against us. What we want is just equal opportunity to make the team, to get the scholarship, to get the job.
Well, you know, it's like the Civil Rights Act of 64. All of these Civil Rights Acts were not sold to the public on the grounds that we're going to replace one type of discrimination against blacks, with a new type of discrimination against whites. They were passed and advertised as ending discrimination generally, but what we're seeing is that the left had a more pernicious intention than they announced, and their real intention is to dispossess the white male hegemony.
That was absolutely their intention, and whether or not you believe it or not, it's inevitably been the result. And
again, we point to the fact if blacks truly were better athletes, then why are these white teams consistently beating these black teams?
And why are we the only program in the country talking about it? That's another thing.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy of silence, and it's fueled by what is called political correctness.
Well,
these are inconvenient truths, as Al Gore's title of his book says, that the elite don't want us talking about, but that's why the political cesspool is in existence, to bring these very politically incorrect truths to life.
And we try to do it as tastefully and as non-controversial. It's controversial because
it's just
it's so alien to
because
so many,
the truth is controversial.
The truth is controversial, and but we try to tell the truth in love. Everything we do is motivated by love for our people and love for our family here on this program. We certainly don't do it for the money. There's none to be made here. We just ask that the people contribute enough to keep us on the air, and it does take money to run this operation. But that's why we do this program. There is a void out there, a void that wasn't filled by anyone else until we came along. And thank God for the Liberty News Radio Network, who gives us a venue and a voice to more people than we were getting, obviously, before we were syndicated here, just broadcasting locally and on the Internet. But we're going well, Keith. It's going strong. It's been a great hour with you. We've got two more fantastic hours forthcoming tonight on this Labor Day weekend edition of the Political Cesspool. We're not on vacation. We're here for you around the clock, always, ladies and gentlemen, serving your interest here in the Political Cesspool. And, Keith, you have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll see you next week. But for the rest of you, don't go anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. Keith's going home. I'm staying put, and I'll be back with you in the second hour right after these words from our sponsors. You're listening to the Political Cesspool radio program on the Liberty News Radio Network.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and said, "Something's got a hold on me." Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the A.